football, the time was, you know, and we really must sign a commitment that, well, one week we'll teach people that 10 minutes is 10 minutes. 8 o'clock is 8 o'clock, so moving forward, we'll move that way. Okay, thank you, honorable members, and ladies and gentlemen, we are proceeding. The department was answering some questions. The latter part of questions answered, let's then finalize the ones that are remaining. In the main, Reza, you'll be putting that annual plan. I don't think it will take us long. We'll just go through it while the department is finalizing the questions.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members. Just in terms of the questions, the one that was asked by Honourable Member Mohale on the performance agreements with the premiers and the president. With the premiers, there is a difference. There are intergovernmental protocols that will be signed between the presidents and the premiers, because the agreement between the minister and the president already expects the minister to work with the 9 different MECs in the province for that particular sector, for each one of the 34 ministers that have concluded agreements. So that is at a vertical level. And they will be meeting in with the delivery agreements in their min-max or through the cluster system. At a horizontal level, the premier then must manage the same MECs in terms of their delivery, but in relation to the protocols that are expected, what the president has signed with the different ministers at a national level. So therefore, there's a slightly different, it is called the intergovernmental protocols in terms of what is expected to manage the horizontal and the vertical delivery agreements between the two. Yes?
Does that mean, I want to understand correctly, maybe let's say that the MEC for local government and housing, the agreement between the minister concerned binds also the MEC. Then, but I'm worried about the premier. What binds the premier? If the MEC is not delivering, it will go directly to the minister. But what about the premier? Thank you.
The intergovernmental protocols are basically dealing with the relationship between the national sphere of government and the provincial sphere of government in relation to the particular mandates, and what is the expectation from the president in relation to what the premier has to deliver in that province. So there are deliverables, but the deliverables that are in the premier's intergovernmental protocol is all around the 12 outcomes of government at the national level. So there is a binding aspect in relation to what the premier has to oversee. But the actual nitty-gritty of the delivery agreements is then between a specific, the Minister of Education will then have a delivery agreement with the MEC for Education insofar that they have committed to improve the matric results by X number, the mathematics literacy, and so forth. But in terms of the overall outcomes, there are certain aspects that the president expects the premier to oversee that those 12 outcomes are met at a horizontal level in that particular province.
In addition, Chairperson, or before coming to that, the point that the honourable member is raising about and the response by the DG. Say, for instance, you take education. You then say you are bound by the very same agreement. If to cement this thing that South Africa is one unitary state. Even when you say this is a competency of the province, even where you say this is a concurrent mandate, the fact remains you are talking about one. That has been concluded. That's why I talked about the fact that even if we say we don't have now what you call a single public service because of the debate at which we pitched the debate on the single public service. But the fact of the matter is that we are there, one. There's one education policy, there's one policy on agriculture, there's one policy on health, so it has to be. But, I mean, then in addition, the premier, the president, in his office, has the ministry responsible for performance monitoring and evaluation, which then says through performance monitoring and evaluation, you're looking at the performance of all the 34 departments. Or the 34 ministers, because they talk about before you talk about all the 34 ministers, you talk about all the 9 premiers, you talk about all the 56 district mayors, you talk about all the 204 local mayors. You talk about all the 6 metro mayors. They understand that in terms of performance monitoring and evaluation, in terms of dealing with making sure that you do what you have committed to do, you are accountable to one authority. And that is the president. So that actually is comes in and then say there is no one who is all out for oneself. That's the kind of arrangement that we're looking at. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. We want to add something? Okay. Oh, sure. Thank you very much. Now, I think based on this contribution that has been done, we can confidently say issues that affected particularly the first and second term, second in particular, had been really looked into. And as a committee, we feel that we have actually exhausted and understood all. Any other issue that we really want to follow up, it might be integrated within the coming programs per se. But satisfactorily so, as the committee, we feel that this space also provided further clarity on also other matters. I know for a fact, and I'm not even expecting members to ask now about a single public service or whether you say integrated, because it is there within the strategic plan of the department, and it's on, and it's going to be, you know, we were given even the date there. So it's not like it's left out. But it's, we know it's one key area, and it's highlighted quite clearly into that strategic planning that the department did submit. And the only thing we'll just watch if the department confined to the time frame. We know there had been some necessary shift, yes, but we know there won't be further. Okay. Now,
you know, just to add there to what you're saying on the single public service. You know, when the debate started, it started as a debate for a single public service. But when the debate was concluded at the point of DPSA tabling a bill to Parliament, the debate was concluded at the point of talking about public administration management. That's why the bill started as a single public service bill, but it ended up as a public administration management bill. Now people have not moved to a point of beginning. Even I am talking about SPS, single public service. I'm not talking about public administration management, because that is how the debate started. It's like, for instance, what we refer to today as promotion of access to information act by year. When we started the debate, we call that debate open democracy. But when the debate concluded, it was promotion of access to information, not open democracy. Through the discussion, it was found that you talk about open democracy, you're talking about something. That's why also the debate up to a point when we had concluded, talk about a single public service. You are then saying, but exactly how single is this single? And that is what is actually causing people to be so worried. Single, if you say single, you mean one more. Are you then saying that you are going to knock down and amend the constitution and de-establish municipalities, you only remain? Is that what you mean? I mean, sticking to single in the strictest sense of the word, or the meaning of the word single, it could mean that. But actually, we put it very clear. We came out very clear when we then ended the debate with them. No. It's far from that. Even the ambiguity is removed. But we still talk about it as single public service. That's why even in terms of our budget, you will find that we have allocated funds for SPF. When we have long changed the debate to be, when you talk of access, promoting access to services, you mean exactly a single public service. But you're trying to use the everyday known language of single public service. So it's there, public administration management, chapter 10. Take it forward. Let's make sure that access services are accessible. Move policies at all these three levels. I'm sorry, I wanted to get, just to clarify with that point that you're putting. You're saying there are other questions?
Yeah, there were two other questions. The other one was the what is the difference between the role of Palama and PCETA? Now, all CETAs have got a particular role. They are watchdogs for that particular sector, for skills in that sector. The role of the PCETA is actually a watchdog role to ensure that they know exactly what the skills are that are needed for the transversal public administration skills in the sector. So there's a difference in terms of a policy-making role and a policy implementation role and the policy assurer role. The PCETA is actually a quality assurer. They have to register qualifications. They have to accredit service providers. Palama is a service provider, so Palama has to be registered by the PCETA as a service provider to be able to give out qualifications to public servants, because in terms of the public service regulation, Palama is allowed to give out certificates or diplomas in public administration. But they can only do that if the PCETA has registered the unit standards and has agreed and accredited Palama as a service provider to do that. So there are definite differences in terms of the roles. But there are areas of general cooperation in terms of ensuring that the aspects of the training skills plan, the sector skills plan, the PCETA is responsible for the sector skills plan. They are responsible to see that all the training plans of all the public service departments as well as the parastatals that fall under their particular purview submit their training plans, their annual training plans, for them to actually compile the sector skills plan. So there's a complete difference in terms of the role of Palama as a training provider and the role of PCETA as someone who registers training providers and registers qualifications. The last one was about the GPF. There's a difference between a pension fund that deals with defined contributions and one that deals with defined benefits. Now, the defined benefits, because it is called a pension fund, the actuarials have worked out the benefit at the time of retirement because it is a pension fund. And therefore, it would be a burden. So it would be a burden to the fund in terms of payout at the expected rate of retirement of the particular individual. So the rules of the pension fund, because it is a defined benefit pension fund, is therefore the protection of all the people who would then benefit at the time of retirement. So if it is paid out, it would be paid out equivalent to a resignation benefit because it's at that particular date. And nobody wants a resignation benefit because it's less lucrative than what a pension retirement benefit would be. So it would be unfair and burdensome to the fund if you were to pay out at the rate of a pension payout as what was expected. So it would be the rules of the fund in terms of how the Board of Trustees apply their mind, whether it's a burden or not. But clearly in terms of how they've computed it, it would be a burden in terms of what the expectation of the spouse would be at the time of the retirement of that particular individual in relation to the benefit. So that is the current status quo in relation to why the payment is only deferred to the time of retirement. Thanks very much for all the responses. Sitting here doesn't mean I want to take DGC off of it. I'm not going to do that at all. No intention.
But it's our time.
I'm joining the development side.
But it's our time now to ask questions.
Why? No, that's why, you know, I'm coming with such that you don't ask too much. You just embrace whatever you see. Okay. Now we're moving to the second part after all the discussions. We have highlighted some areas in terms of Okay, I'll come. We're finishing now. Okay, we are going to outline the third term program. And this is an outline. We will get into the aspects of the fourth term, but the fourth term is not necessarily finalized. Because some of the things that will happen on the third term, particularly on the meeting that we are missing of the 2nd of June, because as you can see, we have already replaced the meeting of the 2nd, which is the second term, which we were meeting with legislators, the speakers, the research institution of all the legislatures, and the Public Service Commission, together with the with all the commissioners. It's no longer there based on the president did make a request to address parliament on that day, and therefore we could not continue with the meeting. But nonetheless, then we'll deal with our administrative aspects, including, what did we include, by the way? Okay, yes, we're also going to actually deal with all those other aspects. So we do need members to be there because we need to create for the minutes so that they don't lapse, they don't overlap to the third term, and therefore it's much more administrative. It doesn't really require the department, but the members in particular, and they have to attend. And the more we, you know, because these things are already distributed, if we send the amendments in advance, that will actually help the day to be quite short. Let's get to the third term. On the third term, of course, we are going to, after the constituency period, you know, we are going to move into the area of the study tour. The study tour, I'm sure the preparation advanced now. There must be communication in terms of who's leaving. That hasn't came to the point of the committee. Those are the things we need to finalize on the 2nd of June. We are going to be spreading into two or three groups. Now it will be two groups. And we have involved the NCOP in terms of this because as we've started to operate as a cluster. We've also involved COCTA. So, of course, there was a request from COCTA that we do have members that cuts across, that participate in public service and administration, and that also participate in COCTA. It will be a good advantage once that is happening. But it's in relation with public administration management bill that is in relation with that talk, because we are therefore going to spread into the African country and the international to actually deal with that, and therefore we will reconvene to actually do that report, which will come somewhere in August for consideration by the department. It's there on the 18th of August. We'll come to it. The meeting of the 2nd of June with legislatures is also there in June. I'm sure, have you identified the 30th? Is that the one for the 30th of July? Because they actually, the Chair of Chairs has said we'll take the second week immediately we're open. So we are going to proceed. While we're closed, we'll be working with the legislature's research institution, because part of our intention, we don't want people to come make speeches, but we want people to come provide solutions. We've looked into the matter. This is how we think we're going to work. So we are also providing direction. For instance, when the speaker will be talking about the collaboration of institutions, what is it that is collaborating? NCOP,
the provincial governments and legislatures, how they work, and including the public, actually the legislatures with government. So in August, there's also, okay, I think there's a lot of other things that will happen, like, you know, it's just the tour, it's that committee work. In August, we've got the Women's Parliament. As this committee, it's part of the cluster, it's part of our cluster. We therefore need to look at issues, you know, that also impact on that, so that we give this also direction, you know, also show that mainstream into the issues of gender. And therefore, I'm sure the department does have a role in terms of doing a general assessment in terms of the impact of gender, in terms of appointment, in terms of program implementation, and so on, so that it moves away from a talk of just women this, women that, but what government is actually doing. We do have to do a role of an impact assessment or analysis in terms of what are we doing in terms of gender. Then moving to the 11th, that will be a briefing by the department there on the progress regarding strategic priorities for 2010. Remember that we did have, then we are going to be moving into that, but the focus will be clean up strategy on CETA. And then there will be also the briefing on the human resource and the national treasury regulations. I know fraud prevention as well. I know the minister is keen on that area. That is what we'll be expecting from the department. And it's one program we've started with that good presentation about the anti-corruption strategy, but would move to those areas in the way it's outlined. And then on August again, on the 18th there, we'll be considering the the draft for that report of the tour, followed by a cluster meeting, which will be a briefing. The minister will be briefing all the cluster committees that will be there on reports in Parliament and the state of the public service. So we can look into that and actually agree how do we want to conceptualize that, because all the audit, SCOPA, and whatever will be part of this committee. And therefore, when we do that, it will make a bigger impact, and we definitely have to agree with the department, the conceptualization around the state of the public service put it. But the focus was on the report of 2010. So that is one key area that will actually show that impact and cutting across. September, there's another briefing on the CETA Palama as well, Public Service Commission, on the compliance with legislation and regulations as raised by the Auditor General's audit report, audit opinion, that is 2009 to 2010, and we know that we've been engaging. So we'd be expecting part of progress, part of remedials. And of course, because we're actually outlining this in on time, we don't expect at the time to have, you know, things that are unclear. We expect where we're given quite a way forward in terms of areas that were identified. And then thereafter, you know, that one is part of actually showing that the instruments that we committed ourselves as a workshop to utilize moving forward. Okay, it might be an addition of if there's other issues, like if the PCTA, if it comes, there might be. But we also would look into the congestion. We know that it's quite a lot. But if it's done by the department, because it's going to be, we'll be directing it to the minister, they can be able to actually bring it in a way that we can be able to absorb it in a day's time. And more so, we get reports before. September, how do we move down? Okay, where's Okesa? Yeah, but I think we'll just limit it to the third term. Okay, the first term you can just say peruse and see, but definitely the third term will be affected by what is going to happen on the third term, including what we have just done. So it won't be definite. Many things are going to change. Even the third term, if there is a need by now to amend anything, it is good time to actually do that at this point in time, particularly from the side of the department. But nonetheless, that's where we are as we stand. 8th of September is the briefing
by the minister in the presidency on GIS and the presidential hotline. You know, it comes again. If we have, and it's briefing by Public Service Commission on its national anti-corruption. Is it hotline or is it a strategy? It's a hotline as well. So, yeah, the synergy, we need that as well. And then, of course, after the People's Assembly, we do have a cluster. You know, we talked about CETA, the image, the necessity for CETA to provide its task as articulated in the Act. CETA as in ICT as an ICT provider of choice for government. Is it of choice or is it, you know, because they talk of choice, but the Act talks of something else. So you really need to come into agreement that how do you become of choice if the Act says you need to be a service provider for the government departments and contract management systems, etc. So basically, we're just giving an outline. We're not going to get into detail this other one, but surely cluster work will also come. There are issues you can pick up if there are that you need, but definitely the fourth one is going to be influenced by the outcome of the rest. It might be this way, but I'm sure not here and there. That is it. That is the brief from our side, Honorable Minister. Any critique? Yes.
No, Chair, if not a critique, just to suggest that the committee may want to review in terms of time allocation. If take, for instance, the 1st of September, from 9:30 to 12:30, you put CETA, you put Palama. Mm. There may not be enough time to deal with the issues there. And when I look at that also in other, but other than that, we may engage on these things. And once we have tightened up, which is going to be finalized now in terms of aligning our priorities with the performance agreement, we might want to also raise other issues that we would like to the committee to consider, whether you don't want to engage with us on those things, so that you have this structured engagement. We know if we have a yes rooster, it makes life easier. Because even in areas where you find that we don't live up to what the committee expects in terms of submitting our documents before we come and appear, if you have a yes rooster, you can actually submit that in advance.
Yeah.
So that come the day that you do a presentation, members will have had an opportunity to go through and even research, because you get what we're reporting to you, but you may also do your own independent research and do that. So, but otherwise, I think it's fine.
Okay, did you?
I think it was just two things in terms of the risk, fraud risk plan, because that falls under National Treasury purview, because it's one of the sub-components of the compulsory risk assessment, the risk assessment strategies of departments in terms of the PFMA. And one of the things is that the risk assessment strategy must have a fraud prevention plan. So whether that was going to be a joint committee in relation to that together with the HR plan. And also the period for the HR plan, would it be historical in terms of the previous financial year for all line departments, because that data would then be available from the previous AG's reports? Or what period would be, because departments would have to table their current annual reports by the 30th of September. So if it's for the previous financial year, as in 19, we'd only get that data then. But if it's for the previous financial year, we'd have that available.
Minister, how do you think it should have, we will take it that way?
Yeah. I think it's fine. Let's take it that way. Maybe also then say, we may, us receiving this for the first time, we may actually have to look at it and then come back to you.
Okay.
Because the other thing is that in what I read from your identification of issues, even if they don't like sort of fairly and squarely lie as a line function activity of the department, to then say, are we able to coordinate? Are we able to coordinate our activities? If it means we might want to come with another portfolio or another department to come and do a joint presentation, it should be possible.
Yeah.
So that in as far as issues are on a policy to make sure that we don't actually lose the centrality and stuff like that. We may have to look at it. But the point that the DG is raising is right. But I think we may come back and, like I said, no, this is a good, it's structured. It actually assists us in terms of how we deal with work going forward.
We will actually send a copy as soon as we've just looked into it, but we'll send it for your comments, and then we'll await here where you think you suggest, so that we can also see if we can integrate the suggestions. But I think now we've reached the end of the committee, especially in the light that there's another meeting in this room at 1. And thank you very much to the department. Thank you, members. And we're looking forward for a good and fruitful interaction in the third term.
Thanks, everybody.